Ой, кувала за озулечка, та й мене забула. Мого кохання нічка взяла та й минула.
From Ukraine, well-known popular singer Ruslana, and that is from a CD that she recorded some time ago called Diki Tansi, which means wild dances, and that is the title track of her winning entry in the 2004 Eurovision entry, and that song was called Kolomeka. And you'll be hearing more from and about Ruslana and her upcoming trip to Canada in later on in the program. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння. При мікрофоні Павліна, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there and welcome again to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio here on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. I'm Pavlina, your host. Thank you so much for joining me. We've got a great program lined up for you. We've got a couple of interviews. We've got Lydia Walansky will be joining us with an update from Ukraine on the Malaysian aircraft disaster in Ukraine and a bit of the political implications of that as she sees it, which is usually pretty accurately. As well, we will be speaking with David Kachma, who is the president of Canada's National Ukrainian Festival in Dauphin, and that will be coming up very soon. In just a couple of weeks, he'll be in the thick of it. So we'll be giving you a sneak preview on what that's all about. As well, we'll have Ukrainian Jewish Heritage, and we've got Volodya Volkov, who will be narrating this week, and he'll be telling you the story of Lydia Kotlarevska, who is a righteous Gentile, and share the story of how she and her family saved Jews during not only World War I, but also earlier in Ukraine. As well, we'll have our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music coming up next. The Cherry Band from Ukraine with their unique and very interesting rendition of that Ivasyuk classic, Червона Рута, The Red Rue. Thank you.
escape and become immersed in a new adventure. It's an experience like no other as the past, present, and future come alive at Canada's National Ukrainian Festival. Experience the culture, the food, the outdoors, and the hospitality. Five fabulous main stage shows, plus the Children's Corner, Heritage Village, Festival Marketplace, parades, dance parties, nightly zabavas, and many entertainers. Weekend passes and camping available. Experience Canada's National Ukrainian Festival, August 1st to 3rd, Dauphin, Manitoba. Get your tickets and weekend camping at cnuf.ca.
Thanks to the foresight and generosity of its donors, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been investing in the future of the Ukrainian-Canadian community for the past 50 years. Since 1963, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been funding initiatives that strengthen our Ukrainian-Canadian identity and enhance our Ukrainian-Canadian cultural heritage. These include fine and performing artists and arts groups, museums, cultural centers, education, as well as authors, journalists, and the Ukrainian-Canadian media, including this program. The foundation strives to become the premier not-for-profit foundation in a Canada which acknowledges the Ukrainian-Canadian community as a fundamental component of Canadian society. Nash Holis listeners are encouraged to support this vision through continued donations into the future. To apply for grants, make a donation, or for more information, contact the Shevchenko Foundation at 204-944-9128, toll-free 1-866-524-5314, or visit shevchenkofoundation.com. The second annual Babas and Borscht Ukrainian Festival takes place August 23rd and 24th in Andrew, Alberta. Featuring Ukrainian music and dance, great Ukrainian food, and even a borscht cook-off, cultural and historical displays and demonstrations. Shop, learn, and explore at Babas Bazaar, special internment camp and Taras Shevchenko tributes, and much more. At the Babas and Borscht Festival, August 23rd and 24th in Andrew, Alberta. For more details and to buy the Baba tickets, go to babasandborscht.ca.
We want you there! You're coming, right?
And now, Ukrainian Jewish Heritage, in cooperation with the Jewish Heritage Museum in Lviv, Ukraine. This special Nash Holis feature is brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative, based in Toronto, Ontario.
Greetings from the Faina Pachurkova Scientific Center for Judaica and Jewish Art in Lviv, Ukraine. The Tkuma Ukrainian Institute for Holocaust Studies in Dnipropetrovsk contains a number of materials concerning Righteous Among the Nations. This honorary title is given to the people of different nations who rescued Jews during the Second World War from 1939 to 1945. The procedure is monitored by Yad Vashem in Jerusalem, a special committee established at the Holocaust Martyrs and Heroes Remembrance Authority. Among the materials at Tkuma is the tremendous heroic story of Lydia Kotlarevska, who rescued Jews during the Nazi occupation of Dnipropetrovsk. Lydia Kotlarevska had been involved in an underground organization and had worked as a nurse in German hospital. She carried out her underground activity jointly with Boris Sondak, a Ukrainian Jew who she hid in her flat. Sondak was responsible for blowing up a bridge on the Dnipro River to halt the progress of the Nazis. In 1942, he and his comrades were arrested and executed. During the Dnipropetrovsk occupation, she also sheltered a Jewish family, Tatiana Rabovskaya, and her sons Viktor and Nikolai. The older son cared for his younger brother and Lydia's young daughter, Alexandra. In November 2002, Yad Vashem notified Lydia Kotlarevska that she had received the honorary title of Righteous Among the Nations for helping the Jewish nation during the Second World War. Delivering the documents to the Future Holocaust History Museum, Lydia Kotlarevska revealed a family history of saving Jews. In 1912, her grandparents, Emilian and Tatiana Khodosenko, rescued a Jewish family, the Lakins, from pogroms that were happening in Yekaterinoslav. She said, "In 1912, my grandparents lived on Targovaya Street in the same neighborhood as a large Jewish family by the name of Lakins. When the pogroms began, Sara Lakina rushed into my grandmother's house and begged for shelter for her family. My grandmother hid them in the cellar located under the kitchen. The Lakins family hid in the Khodosenko house until the pogroms ended and the Black Hundreds left the streets. The Black Hundreds was an early 20th century ultra-nationalist movement in Russia noted for extreme Russocentric doctrines, xenophobia, antisemitism, and incitement to pogroms. The story didn't end there. Lydia continued. In December of 1941, an old man came to our house on Karl Marx Street. He was scared and trembling. When I gave him a cup of tea, he broke down crying. He said to my mother in a low voice, "Yelichka, your mother rescued my family when the Black Hundreds were committing pogroms. The day before, police officers took away our documents and forbade us to go out." Lydia clearly recalls this visit. Unfortunately, nobody knows what happened to the man and his family. Since she was living in occupied territory during the Second World War, Lydia Kotlarevska set the task to rescue people and did her best to fulfill it, but she suffered irreplaceable losses, which will not be forgotten till the end of her life. Her husband, Alexander Kotlarevsky, was killed early in the war. Her father-in-law, Andrei Varivsky, who had participated in an underground city organization, was hung by Nazis. Her mother, Elena, was tortured by the Gestapo when the Nazis learned what Lydia was doing. After being tortured, she was thrown into a ditch, but survived. Lydia's school friend Esfir Patkina was gunned down together with her parents during a mass killing of Jews on October the 13th and 14th, 1941, in the Botanical Garden, the same place her brother in underground, Boris Sondak, was later exterminated. In spite of her horrible experience, Lydia Kotlarevska does not bury her bitter memories. She keeps them alive to honor those who survived as well as those who perished. You can find a photo of Lydia along with this brief biography at the Tkuma Ukrainian Institute for Holocaust Studies website, www.tkuma.dp.ua/en. This is Volodymyr Volkov at the Faina Petrikova Scientific Center for Judaica and Jewish Art in Lviv, Ukraine.
Thanks, Volodya. Щиро дякую. Join us again next week for another episode of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative.
Escape and become immersed in a new adventure. It's an experience like no other. Canada's National Ukrainian Festival. Experience the culture, the food, the celebrations, and the music. Backed by popular demand, international superstar Ruslana. Celebrate with nightly zabavas, dance to Sluhai, Siech, and Trembita, and be entertained by Troyanda dancers. Don't miss Ruslana on her Euphoria Tour at the 49th Annual Canada's National Ukrainian Festival, August 1st to 3rd, Dauphin, Manitoba. Get your tickets and weekend camping at cnuf.ca.
Ви слухайте українську радіопрограму «Наш голос» на багатомовній радіостанції AM 1320 CHMB у місті Ванкувері. Earlier today, I spoke with Lydia Wolanski in Yeremche, Ukraine. Lydia, of course, has been a frequent visitor here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. Lydia, the crash of the Malaysian Airlines civilian aircraft a few days ago in eastern Ukraine has really intensified the conflict in Ukraine, has put Ukraine back again front and center on the world stage. And I detected a mood shift within the people of Ukraine, more of a sense of urgency, impatience, frustration with the West. Is that a correct assessment? Or is that an accurate observation?
I'm not sure about the mood shift in Ukraine. There's very definitely a very big game changer, I think, around the world, especially in terms of the European Union and the U.S. and Canada, and Australia, because there were some Australian passengers. So a lot of people who were kind of sitting on the fence regarding what's going on in Ukraine have definitely made it very clear that they are not happy with Putin, that this is going to lead to further sanctions if he doesn't start doing something immediately to get rid of the situation in eastern Ukraine that is largely his doing.
So this morning I had seen a post on Facebook, which, you know, I know we should be cautious about what we believe, what we see on Facebook, but the Dutch president made a statement indicating that he was hoping that this was an accident, that Russia was not really involved. And there was a fair bit of backlash, I thought, to that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he was saying he's hoping Russia was not involved, that does come across as a rather naive statement at this point in time, since there's been ample evidence for months now that not only is this group of militants or terrorists, depending on how you prefer to refer to them, being led by actual Russian citizens, including a Russian GRU officer who is Igor Girkin, whose nom de guerre is Strelkov, meaning like Strelets in Ukrainian. He's a Russian officer and he's a GRU guy, which is sort of like being in the Secret Service in another country. And one of the other guys, Alexander Borodai, is a Moscow businessman who was involved in turning Transnistria into a unacknowledged, you know, smuggling-based statelet out of part of Moldova. So these are people who have been working on behalf of Russia to create, to stir up conflicts in other parts of Russia's former sphere of influence, as they like to call it back then. So it's very obvious that these people are part of a very deliberate movement on the part of Russia to destabilize Ukraine and possibly take away territory, but I'm sure they'd be just as happy simply to destabilize it so that Ukraine can't move in any direction itself. So for the Dutch president to make a statement like that, I hope Russia wasn't involved. It's sort of like wishful thinking. It sounds really bizarre. It's obvious that Russia is arming these people, and back at the end of June, they were bragging in social networks about the fact that they had a Buk surface-to-air missile system. And the Buk surface-to-air missile system is not a child's game. It's not a man pad. It's not a grad. It's a very serious complex of six vehicles. It's not even just six parts. It's six vehicles, and it requires a substantial crew to run, and it has six missiles on it. And they're able to shoot it as high as 39,000 feet. So this is a pretty serious bit of weaponry. Ukraine's Air Force planes don't fly at that kind of altitude. So the only purpose of having something that powerful in Ukraine, shipping something like that into Ukraine, would be to hit something that's flying way above where Ukrainian Air Force planes were actually flying all this time. I think the highest one was flying about 6,500 meters, which is about 20,000 feet. So that's a substantial difference between 20,000 feet and 35,000 feet.
Are you saying that there was a deliberate attempt to shoot down a civilian aircraft?
Well, the dark corridors of Mr. Putin's mind are rather hard to understand. If you have a sense of what his game plan is for Ukraine, then there is a lot of sense to having somebody come in with a crew, with this very, very fancy piece of equipment, shoot down a plane, scoot out of Ukraine with the equipment and the crew, and blame it on these so-called separatists. Because of the fact that the world keeps talking about them for the most part as separatists, it implies that they are Ukrainians who want to separate from Ukraine.
Right.
Otherwise, what are they doing in Ukraine? But they're not. They're not. They are. This is a Russian initiated, Russian led, Russian financed, Russian organized movement. These people who are running around Ukraine and eastern Ukraine, taking over towns, stealing stuff, abducting people, torturing them, murdering them. These are not Ukrainians. These are not people on the ground in Ukraine. There are a lot of people in eastern Ukraine that, yeah, they don't like Ukraine. They don't want to call themselves Ukrainian, et cetera, et cetera. But you don't see them lining up in recruitment offices to join these men's forces. They're not joining Igor Girkin or Borodai or any of those other people who are actually running the show with arms in eastern Ukraine. They just sit and they crouch, but they're hiding in their houses because they're afraid. So it's a false name for something that actually doesn't exist in eastern Ukraine. It sets up a situation which Putin has already made clear on a couple of occasions, where he says, well, Ukraine obviously can't control its separatists. Well, they're not Ukraine separatists, so obviously Ukraine can't control them. They're Russia's separatists. They are people imported from Russia, including a whole bunch of mercenaries who came from a very well-known battalion called Vostok that's full of Chechens. There's nothing to do with Ukraine whatsoever. And also these so-called Cossacks that were also down in Crimea. These are also ultra-nationalist Russian mercenaries They are not Ukrainians. They're not people from Donetsk. They're not people from Luhansk. They're not people from anywhere within Ukraine for the most part. They're mercenaries. They're basic mercenaries who have been paid and hired to come here and do this. And when you realize that's what's going on, it really changes the picture. These are not people that Ukraine should have control over. These are people that Russia should have control over. But by calling them separatists, Putin can wash his hands of the situation, sort of like Pontius Pilate and Jesus, and say, well, why don't we let the rabble choose between Jesus and Barabbas?
Yeah.
A bunch of drunkards in the middle of the night decide to choose the criminal instead of Jesus because they really don't give a darn.
Yeah.
It's the same idea. By calling them separatists, he can basically, you know, kind of pass the buck to Ukraine and say, these are your separatists. How come you can't control them? Maybe we should send in a peacekeeping mission. Because he said that several times, and that is his game plan.
Yeah.
So if it looks like these separatists stupidly, accidentally shot down a civilian plane, that creates a situation where Ukraine looks like it's out of control. Unfortunately, I don't think he counted on the kind of reaction that there would be around the world for this. Because for him, I think shooting down a civilian plane is nothing. He's done that before. He didn't really give a shit when he did that with the other airliner. The Korean one was done a long time ago. There was some other airliner
Polish.
That was shot down.
The Polish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that one. We'll won't even get into that one.
Yeah.
But his attitude about that kind of thing is, it's just collateral damage. So it looks to me very much, from where I'm looking at the situation, looking at all the different things that have been going on, that this sets the Russian mercenaries here up as the fall guys.
Mm-hmm.
They look like the bad guys. Oh, they must have been drunk when they fired that off and they didn't know what they were doing and they were accidentally shot a passenger liner at 30,000 feet instead of a military transporter at about 15,000 feet. I don't know. I see a big difference between the two. Maybe somebody else doesn't. So to me, this seems to fit into his narrative, but I think he miscalculated, just like he miscalculated about the kind of support he has in eastern Ukraine. I think he honestly thought that he would have the same kind of, you know, rah-rah Russia fans in eastern Ukraine that he had in Crimea, and he was wrong.
I was reading that he's kind of caught between a rock and a hard place because Putin's popularity at home hinges on escalating the war. So if he backed off, he would lose popularity in Russia. And so, but if he continues the war, he's losing popularity in the West.
Well, he's not losing popularity in the West. He really does. I don't think popularity in the West means much to Putin at all.
But he's got to, maybe not popularity is not the right word, but allies. For his business allies, dependents on those who are dependent on Russian oil and gas, his money, his gravy train.
Well, I think you are not dealing with a person who is entirely in his right mind. anybody who has that kind of power and is that kind of power hungry, and who has that much resources at his disposal, and he does have an enormous amount of resources at his disposal, including all the billions of dollars that were stolen from Ukraine that are now being probably used to finance a lot of this war. I think he may very well react in a completely worst possible way in this situation. Because the problem is, he's been, not so much his popularity in Russia, but he's been feeding Russians a really bizarre line.
Mm-hmm.
They did some interviews on the streets of Moscow, and even young people were saying, oh yeah, Americans shot down that plane, and the plane was full of dead bodies. These people all died several days ago. In fact, there's even another story going around that the Americans took the dead bodies from the Malaysian airline that fell 2 months, 3 weeks ago, and it put him in this plane, and now this plane has collapsed. It's just fantastic when you think of the amazing parallel universe these people have created. This is Putin's doing.
Yeah, well, but you know what? The sad thing and the alarming thing to me, Lydia, is that there are Canadians and Americans that are repeating that and actually believe it.
But anybody who actually seriously starts talking about these kinds of theories is most likely to be a hired pen from the Kremlin. In other words, a troll. I mean, I think ordinary people may be confused. I have no question about that they're confused about the whole thing. And when they hear about nationalists and separatists and stuff like that, a lot of them get very annoyed. I had a friend in England say to me, oh, I'm tired of hearing all this hysterical stuff about terrorists, you know, why can't you guys just stop fighting and have a beer and forget about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, you just realize how little people really know and understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. It isn't about nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that is the Putin narrative, that this is a nationalist thing between Russians and Ukrainians. It isn't. It never was. Because if Russians were treated in Russian speakers and ethnic Russians were treated in Ukraine the way Ukrainians were treated in Russia, there'd be no Russian schools anywhere, there'd be no Russian theater, no Russian mm-hmm. movies, no Russian books, no Russian press, no Russian nothing. And any deputy that opened his mouth and spoke in Russian in the Verkhovna Rada would be kicked out instantly.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And people don't get that. That in fact, Russian and the Russian language have always had a very, very high status in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hangover from Soviet times when speaking Russian was supposed to be cool. And if you moved to the city from the country, you immediately tried to switch to Russian so nobody would think you were a country bumpkin because you spoke Ukrainian.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
mm-hmm.
all the stuff that people just don't know about the realities on the ground. And I think that what's driving Putin has nothing to do with Russian people, has nothing to do with protecting Russian people. It has to do with two things. His own ambitions of power, and power, to my mind, is a very, very addictive, dangerous thing, and we see that over and over again with world leaders. And resources. He took Crimea to get the resources in the Black Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And that the thing that astounded me about that was how Europe absolutely didn't get that they had just shot themselves in the foot by letting that happen, because he took away a potentially other source of natural gas besides Gazprom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in other words, they allowed him to increase Gazprom's monopoly over resources in the region. And why Slovyansk was important? Two reasons. First of all, it had a very large arsenal of weapons. But secondly, it's one the beginning of a very large shale gas field that runs from Slovyansk all the way to Kharkiv. And you're not going to tell me that that isn't part of the calculation. It just happens that these are also in territories where there's large Russian populations,
mm-hmm.
large ethnic Russian populations, not all of whom have any sympathy for Russia at all right now. I mean, I have friends in Kyiv that are ethnic Russian. Both parents are Russian. They grew up in a Russian-speaking home, but they were born in Ukrainian. And they said, we live here. We consider ourselves citizens of Ukraine, and we can't stand what's going on in Russia. We just can't believe the people in Russia are buying into all of this. And there's a lot of Russian speakers in Ukraine who will say the same thing. So it's not a thing of nationalism at all. It's a thing of trying to make a power grab on your neighbor because you can get away with it. And so far he has been, but this crash has been a game changer for sure. Because a lot of world leaders have become much more direct and assertive about the fact that they hold Putin responsible for this. You can see it in the popular press in all kinds of countries, from Scandinavia over to America and Canada, Britain, etc., Italy, Spain, Portugal.
And Australia.
Yeah.
Australia came out
yeah.
with a very strong, Tony Abbott came out with a very strong statement, and Katerina Yushchenko actually just posted on Facebook. She was just astounded that Putin's response was outrage rather than sympathy for the Australians who died.
Absolutely. No, I posted that last night, actually.
You posted that too?
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, because the Australians lost a few people as well, because there were a lot of people flying to an AIDS conference. They lost a couple of very important mm-hmm. researchers, AIDS, who may also have had some AIDS paraphernalia with them.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are concerned that they may have lost some important research stuff there. Now, I'm not sure that they would have been traveling with that, but that's hard to know. That would have to be resolved. But anyway, so some of these people were actually going to Australia for an AIDS conference that were killed on this flight.
Right.
There were quite a few, actually, very well-known people in the AIDS community, in the AIDS research community, not the AIDS community, but the AIDS research community.
Mm-hmm. And we started out talking about the mood of Ukrainians. I've noticed that there's an awful lot of sympathy. Ukrainian people are going to the Dutch embassy, and tons of flowers, expressions of grief. They still want to be part of Europe, even though we've got Merkel still playing footsie with Putin, the Dutch still playing footsie with Putin, the French, the warships are still, that's not been called off yet.
Merkel has to be given a bit of credit here, because Merkel actually did, one of the first things she said the day this happened was that France cannot give Putin those mistrals. She said that very clearly. And I think that's a very important statement on her part, because that really supports the worldwide movement to get France to stop this sale. There are many other countries that could buy these boats. It's just a matter of looking for different clients. It's only two boats. It's a normal price for that kind of range of defense equipment. And one of the things I suggested a long time ago was, why doesn't the international community get together and sponsor one of those boats for Ukraine? We need to have some serious defense as well now, with Russia controlling much of the Black Sea, mm-hmm. and Ukraine doesn't have any, mm-hmm. because it used to have a naval base in Sevastopol, in a different harbor from the Russian one. It's lost the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think everybody was kind of hoping that the elephant that they all could see was just going to kind of disappear, mm-hmm. and the elephant did disappear. It's turned into a nine-headed hydra.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I found very interesting was, before this incursion started, before the Maidan started, most Ukrainians did not want NATO. The majority were against joining NATO, the whole idea of it. And now that has completely reversed.
Well, the thing about NATO that's very difficult for us to understand in the West is, people in the Soviet Union were raised to believe that NATO is the enemy. Even though Russia was supposedly, or the Soviet Union was supposedly, an ally of NATO countries, they were raised with a very definite idea that NATO is awful, NATO is bad, it's the devil, it's evil, etc., etc. And the funny thing is, they had this story one time. They said, you know, when we were asking people in Eastern Ukraine, what do you think of NATO? It was like, oh, no, evil, evil, you know. And then when they said, well, what about the Pivnichno-Atlantichny Alliance, meaning the North Atlantic Alliance? Mm. Oh, well, why not? Because people don't really know what NATO is. It's just a boogeyman.
Interesting.
You know, if it had a different name, or if they said OTAN like it is in French, they probably would say, oh, yeah, why not? Because the point is, they're not specifically against allying with Western countries. They are specifically against NATO, which was driven into their brains as an evil thing all through Soviet times. So anybody over the age of 35 in any post-Soviet country remembers being told that NATO is evil, and so it affects their opinions on that. And that's been changing partly because of demographic changes, and also because what's happened now. Ukraine can see perfectly well how absolutely helpless it is when Russia starts doing its thing.
Yeah. You had said that this whole thing is a game changer. Not that war is a game, but what do you see that's different now, that strikes you, that this whole thing has changed?
Well, in a sense, a game changer has been the fact that so many world leaders now are very clearly making the statement that they consider Putin guilty. They no longer are buying the smoke screens. They're no longer pretending that it's an elephant. They're seeing that this is a nine-headed hydra, and they're saying, we got to do something. What they're prepared to do remains a question, but they're very clear about who they consider to be responsible for this. Even if they don't think he's the one that ordered somebody to fire on the airplane, because that's something that might be impossible to ever prove, mm-hmm. it's very clear that he provided the weapons, and it's very clear that he has been supporting the people that are obviously behind it, or the people controlling the territory from which this missile was launched. Because according to satellite imagery, it was definitely launched from the territory that's under the control of the terrorists right now.
The Ukrainians...
And also, mm-hmm. he's terrified for another thing. I don't know if you're aware of it. Ukraine is actually suing to have the Donetsk People's Republic, DNR, and the Luhansk People's Republic, LNR, declared terrorist organizations.
Yes.
And if that happens, Russia will then be considered a country that's involved in state-sponsored terrorism. And that's going to be a major problem for Putin. At that point, all financial systems get shut out, everything gets shut out, and the country becomes completely isolated. At that point, he will be like Gaddafi was.
Do you think that will actually happen?
There's a very good possibility, because there's a lot of people who are extremely angry about this crash. A lot of people. 300 people is a lot of families, 11 different countries. That's a lot of impact. I just think he honestly miscalculated the response in the West. Because the thing is, when you live in a certain environment, and that environment is completely reinforced by the people around you, who may or may not even be telling you the truth, which is often what happens to a dictator, that people no longer tell them the truth because they tell them what they want to hear. you think everybody else in the world operates the same. I mean, the West makes the same mistake. We think that Russians are relatively free and they're very open, that they're able to distinguish lies from truth, et cetera, you know, or that they have certain ways of dealing with things that they don't. They definitely have a different worldview and a different set of values and a different way of perceiving everything going on around them. And they can put a spin on anything you give them to make it sound totally twisted. I've heard it done over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So he assumes because his world runs the way it does that the rest of the world probably runs the same way. And so when you think that way, he would have assumed that other countries would have said, well, you know, so well, like they blew up a plane, you know, so a few people died, let's move on, you know, we're not gonna, you know, let's have the funeral, send them a few flowers, say you're sorry, and let's move on.
Let's hope that that this will work, that those two organizations will be declared terrorist organizations, and I think that'll be a face saver for everybody, but they'll still be able to put the pressure on him and hopefully end this horrible war and let Ukraine get back to building its nation.
That would be very, very nice.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us, for giving us an update, Lydia, and stay safe over there in Ukraine, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much, too, Paula, and thanks to your audience.
Lydia Walensky, correspondent in Yaremcha, Ukraine. And you're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver.
Escape and become immersed in a new adventure. It's an experience like no other as the past, present, and future come alive at Canada's National Ukrainian Festival. Experience the culture, the food, the outdoors, and the hospitality. Five fabulous main stage shows, plus the Children's Corner, Heritage Village, Festival Marketplace, parades, dance parties, nightly zabavas, and many entertainers. Weekend passes and camping available. Experience Canada's National Ukrainian Festival, August 1st to 3rd, Dauphin, Manitoba. Get your tickets and weekend camping at cnuf.ca.
We spoke with the president of Canada's National Ukrainian Festival last Wednesday on the Nanaimo edition of the program, and here is a repeat broadcast of that interview. On the line now is the president of the National Ukrainian Festival. His name is David Kachma. Thank you. Welcome, Vitaly.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Now, this is the 49th annual. I've been to Dauphin's Festival a few times, not recently, unfortunately. But the last time I went, that was just a great load of fun. I don't imagine it's going to be anything different this year.
No, actually, this year we've practically sold out all our camping areas. So if that's an indication of the crowd we're going to get, that would be fantastic.
Absolutely, yeah.
We're pushing on our 49th year this year, so it's getting close. Next year is our 50th anniversary year coming up, too.
Well, I guess you're probably making plans for that already, but meanwhile, there is this year's festival to do, and it sounds like it's going to be great. We've got Ruslana, and you've got some other headliners as well that are fairly well known.
Yes, we have a variety of dance groups. We have like Troyanda Dance Ensemble. These come out of Winnipeg. We have a group from Volya dancers and Yevshen, and I believe those are from Edmonton and Saskatoon. And then we have some local groups too that will be performing too, like the Bratva Studios and our own Zirka dancers. We have a girl, also a singer, which we are looking forward to seeing this year, and her name is Valeria Goncher, and she comes from Regina, and she is an excellent singer. She's sort of a mini Ruslana in herself.
Wow. Now, how did you manage to snag Ruslana? I understand this is her only appearance in Canada. She's not doing a tour or anything.
Yeah, we had her here a few years ago, and we sort of kept in touch with her. And we've had so many requests for people wanting to see her come back to our festival. So we contacted her, and sure enough, she said she would be willing, more than willing to come.
Well, that was a smart move, because when you've got the 50th looming, it's you really need something, a draw for the 49th, I would think.
Yes, for sure. That's right.
Yeah. Now, you've got some fabulous groups that will be performing as well, music groups, and there will be lots of dancing in the street. Tell us about the activities. What if somebody is thinking of coming out to Dauphin, maybe getting you one of those last camping spots, or if there might be a hotel room available, what would they be in store for from August 1st to 3rd?
Okay, well, like we are a three-day festival, so the community here, the city of Dauphin, is just buzzing most of the time with people coming in and out. And our whole activities actually start Thursday evening with a downtown street dance and fair.
Oh, those are so much fun. I remember those. They are too much fun.
Yeah, and that's put on there. The Chamber of Commerce here helps to put that on with us, and it's always a great hit, too, for the local people and anybody who wants to come along, too. And as we move into the weekend, Friday is our opening day, and we have a grand official opening in the evening grandstand. And also it's the day that we have our amateur talent competitions. And this year, our amateur talent competition is just gone way out of control. We usually get under 100 entries, but this year it's well over almost 200 entries into the amateur talent. So that's going to be something busy for Friday. Saturday morning, we kick off the day with a parade downtown. And our parades usually run about an hour long, and we're told it's one of the better parades in the area, so that makes us feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as we move through the weekend, then also Saturday is a big day with two full grandstand shows, and we have just oodles of other activities going on with our Dauphin Agricultural Heritage Club, who will come in with their farm machinery, and they do threshing demonstrations.
Wow.
And you could even watch a little chick hatch in a little hatchery thing they have. Just amazing. And down, since I'm talking about the Heritage Village area, we also have the clay bake ovens. And we do bake bread daily, and it's fresh out of the oven, which is sold to the public. And they're welcome to come down and have a nice slice of fresh bread and homemade butter and just delicious.
I remember as a little child, I think I remember, I'm not sure now if this is one of those memories because it's become legendary, but my grandparents were homesteaders, and I recall that homemade bread was just, there's nothing like bread out of an outside bake oven. And of course, that's all our ancestors had when they came to Canada. There were no stoves. They made their own ovens. And I think they're called, there's a name for them. It's becoming a trend again now. Are they adobe?
Yeah, the oven itself is called a peach.
And
you just can't beat that kind of bread, never.
Yeah, and there's a whole village, and it's called, the location where you're at is called Salaw, which means village.
Yeah, it's the Sela Ukraina village, and they also have, in conjunction with the festival area, we have the festival village or heritage village itself. And it's what we try to do is we provide a living village, meaning that in every of the homes that are there, there's a school, church, grocery stores. These are all manned with people who are in costume. And they kind of play the role of people who lived in that area, and you can talk to them and see what they're doing. Some of them are knitting, some are doing whatever, it makes it very, very interesting. We also have a hall there. It's called Rhodes Hall, and in the hall itself is the displays put on by the Ukrainian Musicians Association, and it's sort of like their Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be located in Winnipeg, but then they thought it was suitable to have it up at our site. So we have it there, too. So it's a very interesting thing to see all the different bands and groups that performed in the past and at local weddings and whatnot. And it's very interesting.
That's something new, because I did see that one the last time I was there, which was several years ago now. You know what? But one thing that stands in my mind is this, the setting of you're sitting in the stands and looking down at the grandstand, and you see in the back, it looks almost, I was in the Carpathians 2 years ago for the first time, and it's the Riding Mountains are very, very reminiscent of the Carpathians, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They're very picturesque, and actually our amphitheater itself is built right into the side of the mountain.
Yeah,
and we've got seating capacity there of, I believe, up to 12,000 to 15,000 people. Has been expanded in the last couple of years.
So. Oh, expanded. It was big when I was there. Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. You just have to come and see. And the nice thing, too, is when you're in the amphitheater, you get a bird's eye view of the meadows and fields down below.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can see when we have our Cossacks. We have our dancing and riding Cossacks that come riding up over a little knoll up there with their flags and their swords. And
the red cannon this year?
And the cannon again this year, right? Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and they do a bit of horse tricks, too, just like the Cossacks from the 17th century.
Yes, actually, they added, just a couple of years ago, they added a Cossack camp.
Oh!
And they cook their own food there, and you can go down there and slice off a chunk of pork or whatever they're cooking over the spit and have a you know, some refreshments or listen to their music and play some Cossack games. And it's they make it so it's very, very friendly and inviting.
Well, very timely given what's going on in Ukraine right now, kind of a throwback.
exactly.
Yeah. So tell us then the some of the headliners of the music. You said there are three zabavas, which are like dance parties.
Yes, we have zabava every evening of our festival, and from Friday evening we have a band called Siege, and they are, I believe, from Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
And Saturday evening we have Sluhai, and I think they're from Winnipeg also in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And new for this year, we have a group on Sunday that are from Edmonton, and they're called Trembita.
Trembita, yeah.
And they're a very young, exciting band, so we're looking forward to those guys, too. But every evening of our festival, we have this huge Ukrainian party that we put on, and people can get up there and dance and show their stuff and whatever, just like a good old Ukrainian wedding kind of setting.
I know. Oh, I have to find a way to come this year. I'm really wanting to get
sure
up there. And, of course, it would not be a Ukrainian festival without food.
Oh, yes. Like I say, we have that baked bread, but also we have vendors and food vendors that serve all those delicious holubtsi and pierogies and you name it. It's all there, and it's delicious food.
And you said that there is a little bit of accommodation left if anybody has an RV or a tent, I guess, as well?
Yeah. Yes. I mentioned, our upper camping area was totally sold out, but we've expanded now into just a little in the lower area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still plenty of room there for campers and motorhomes or whatever you please to bring. And we'll find a spot for you.
Okay, that's fabulous. So there is, once you get in the gate, everything is free except for the grandstand shows. Is that correct?
That's correct. Actually, it's not correct.
No.
Because it's a one-pay gate. You pay at the gate as you come in.
Uh-huh.
And then everything else is included, including grandstands, all the show, the stage entertainments, everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's all one-pay gate.
Wow. Okay, and that's a good deal, because what's the price for the...
Our advance tickets that you can order by either calling our office or going online, our weekend passes are $85 plus tax, and then Friday, if you want to go for one day at a time kind of thing, Friday is $30, Saturday is $50, and Sunday is $50.
Okay.
And our camping fees are $40 a weekend, which you can't beat anywhere.
Okay. Yeah.
And a day camping pass is $20.
Wow. Okay.
And don't forget also our children that are 13 and under, accompanied by adults, are free. So.
Wow. Very, very reasonable for the entertainment that you're getting. So,
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, sounds like a lot of fun. If anybody wants to go ahead and order tickets from you or find out more about the festival, you have a website.
Yes, we sure do. Our website is www.cnuf.ca.
Stands for Canada's National Ukrainian Festival. Easy
right
to remember, yeah. And is there a phone number as well that people can call?
Definitely.
You?
I've actually got a toll-free number because I know you're calling from out west, so you can call by toll-free. It's 1-877-474-2683.
Okay, so 1-877-474-2683 or cnuf.ca online.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, David, for coming on and talking to us and giving us this wonderful sneak preview. All the best. I'm sure it will be a successful event, as always, and look forward to talking to you again soon. I'm sure next year we'll be here. The 50th will be here soon enough.
Sure. It was my pleasure speaking with you.
Okay. Thank you very
much.
You
have a great day.
And you too.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, and we were speaking with David Ketchma, who is the president of Canada's National Ukrainian Festival. And you can find out more information about the festival at www.cnuf.ca or call 1-877-474-2683. Here's what's coming up this week in Vancouver's Ukrainian community. The Consulate General of Malaysia, Vancouver, will open a condolences book at its premises number 1805 on the 18th floor of the Fortis BC building, 1111 West Georgia in Vancouver. The condolence book will be open on Monday, July 21st until Wednesday, July 23rd from 2:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. So if you would like to express your condolences to the families of those who perished in the terrible Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 crash in eastern Ukraine, you can do so over the next 3 days from 2:30 to 4 p.m. at the Malaysian Consulate in Vancouver. As well, on Wednesday, July 23rd, there will be an anti-Putin rally in front of the Consulate of the Russian Federation in Vancouver, located at 409 Granville Street. It starts at 2:30 in the afternoon. If you'd like details, visit www.ukrainianvancouver.com. On Wednesdays, catch Nasholos Ukrainian Roots Radio broadcasting live from Nanaimo to North and Central Vancouver Island, the Gulf Islands, the Sunshine Coast, Washington State, and Greater Vancouver. Wednesdays from 12 to 1 p.m. on CHLY 101.7 FM, Radio Malaspina. Contact TV airs on multicultural channel Omni 1 and on channel 8 on Shaw Cable Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. with a repeat broadcast the following Monday at noon. If you have announcements or story ideas you'd like aired on Contact, please email them at studio@contact.ca. That's studio@kontakt.ca. And at 5 p.m. Sunday evening, slip your radio dial right back here to AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver and join me for another hour of fun here on Nasholos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In between broadcasts, you'll find upcoming events, program information, audio archives, podcast feeds, and much more at www.nasholos.com. Ну, ми майже скінчили нашу програму, вже час додому висказати до побачення, але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Голова без розуму – то так, як дзвін без голосу. And our proverb of the week translates as a head without common sense is like a bell without any sound. Well, that just about wraps it up for Nasholos once again. So this is Pavlina on behalf of all of us here at Nasholos and AM 1320. Thanks for listening and Dobranich!